Meeting will come to order. We do not have a quorum. I apologize for the audio equipment. It was not working, so we just got that fixed, and we're ready to go. So we're going to jump right into this. We'll wait for approval of the minutes, of course, until we get a few more members here. So I'm going to ask that Mr. Thorbeck move front here. We'll begin there. We'll take testimony. And we have about 10 minutes on the agenda for you. So if you would state your name, who you represent, and begin, please.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Even without a quorum, I'm happy and delighted to be here. And particularly kind of share this presentation. My colleague, Julie Tresh from the University of Minnesota, she is a key person over there and a very valued friend and colleague. The Center for Rural Design, which I'm director of, did I say I'm Dewey Thorbeck? This is all kind of new to me, so I'm a little bit nervous, so forgive me for that. But 14 years ago, I started the first Center for Rural Design in the world. For many, many years, the universities around the country and the world really had taught urban design, but never were anywhere, and even until the program was started here at the university, has there been a program in rural design. And what rural design, if you can think of it, is if urban design is one side of the coin, then rural design has to be the other side of the coin. And what it tries to do is to bring the problem-solving process of rural design to rural issues. And until this center got started, it just didn't exist anywhere. And so now, after 14 years, we have some pretty good experience working with communities throughout the state. And just when you think about the state, I mean, we are ecologically probably the most diverse state in the nation. We're the only state that has three very unique biomes that extend down through the state. So one size doesn't really fit all. I mean, there's a great deal of difference between Southwest and Northeast and so forth. And during the 14 years, we've been working with communities at a county level, at a township level, at a small town level. We worked with communities like Roseau and Wadena after a disaster situation. And design is a way to kind of bring the community together. We try to link science to society. That's what design tries to do. We're not scientists, but we are translators. And that path can go two ways, from science to society, but also working with society, we can bring it back to the science and say, these are the issues that we need to resolve and so forth. Well, we have discovered, really, that throughout the state, there is a great deal of need for assistance in planning and looking at issues. And these issues often are crossing boundaries, whether it is related to a watershed or whether it's related to a climate change issue. There's all kinds of things that are going on. And communities are having a hard time obtaining design assistance, partially because they can't afford it, and partially because they don't really know how to deal with some of the issues because they're not always sure what they are. And it's only through the process of looking at it that we can find the connections and try to find a way to weave a solution through to make a connection, say, between climate change and tourism and agriculture production. And finally, I would just like to say before maybe answer some questions, is that there are huge changes taking place in the world. And Minnesota, probably being one of the key agricultural spots in the world with these three biomes, that with another 3 billion people on this planet over the next 40 years, food security, food production, where that's a big issue, water resources, water quality, renewable energy from a wide range of natural sources, wind, solar, bioenergy, and of course health. And when we talk about health, we talk about it from the connection between human, animal, and environmental health is one interkind of connected thing. You can't talk about environmental health without also talking about human health. You can't look at animals without looking at humans and vice versa. So design is a way to weave all of these things together. So we are proposing in the document that you have, in the little letter, a design assistance program where we can work with rural communities. They can we'll have a system where they can apply for funds and on some kind of a matching basis, because we realize that no matter who you are, if you're not a stakeholder, if you don't help pay for what the services are, it doesn't mean as much to you as it would if you were part of the process. So the communities would apply, they would based on their ability to pay, we would then match it with the funds that we're requesting from the legislature, and then we would work, and then but we have the entire University of Minnesota as a resource. So depending on the issue, we can reach out and pull groups together, just as we've been doing over the last 14 years. And I might say that you are funding us right now. We receive partial funding from the state legislature every year, and without that funds, we would not be able to go out and meet with communities and try to help them find funding. And often it's the Minnesota McKnight initiatives that are providing the funding, because without those funds, it would even be a worse situation than it is today. So that's it. That's what we are about, and that's what we think would be. Hey, it's very much needed, and we think we're positioned to be able to manage and provide this, because we've been doing it for 14 years. And so that's my simple presentation today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for the testifier? Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the introduction. Across the street from my house in St. Peter is the Center for Rural Policy and Development. And as we go through today, I'm just wondering whether the Center for Rural Policy and Development has been included, consulted, been a stakeholder in the discussions as we go forward.
I have met with them, and we're trying to connect. And, of course, as you know, the Center for Rural Policy down at the University of Missouri, for God's sake, was involved with Southern Minnesota on a very large economic analysis. And the Center for Rural Policy in St. Peter is now following up on that with the McKnight there. And we're trying to connect with them. We haven't been successful.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that former Representative Brad Finstad, who's now leading the center, certainly has, I think, been taking some very positive steps in terms of expanding the center's role and expanding the center's resources, particularly from the private sector. So I guess I would encourage further outreach because I would think the center would be an important stakeholder. We also want to avoid duplicating effort.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I'm late. I had constituents, and they had me tied to my chair. And I understand that you're talking about Central Lakes egg right now? No? I'm sorry. I was just told that. So
you are really late.
Okay. Well, that already has already been?
No. Representative Ward, no.
Mr. Chair? Okay. I'll tune in later then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So next time we'll call security and make sure you're not tied to your chair. All right. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Thorbeck, for this presentation. It's the first time I've actually heard about it. Can you give some concrete or specific examples of what you've done in the past or what you might be hoping to do in the future?
Mr. Thorbeck.
Well, for instance, I'll just tell you about Roseau. In 2002, as you know, they sit on the bottom of former Lake Agassiz, and they had 10 inches of rain. You know, it's like dumping a glass of water on your table. Water goes everywhere. And they had huge damage to the city and the Roseau River going through there. And Bob Berglund, who was the former regent at the university and commissioner of agriculture, contacted the Center for Rural Design because they were really struggling to figure out how to recover and to do it in such a way that there was community support for it. And we got involved. We went through a community design visualization process. It took over about 6 months of time involving the community. And according to Todd Peterson, he said that we did 100 years of reconstruction in 6 years. And without the buy-in by the citizens in the vision for the community, the city council couldn't have made the kind of decisions they had to make to get things going. And it's just a way of kind of, and that's just an example of how when you get citizens involved in determining what the problem is and then coming up with the solution, it's really received much, much better. So it's evidence-based design, if you will.
Representative Poppy.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. So if some community or organization decided they wanted your assistance to do that, who comes to you to ask you to do that, and how do you begin that buy-in process?
Mr. Thorbeck.
In many situations in the past, and I think it will be in the future too, It could be a citizen group, like in Isati County. It could be a township board in another situation, or it could be a city council, or it could be a nonprofit group that works with the city council. So it could come in from any number of ways. Right now, they contact us because of word of mouth, or they've heard about us in some way from some other community. What we envision is being able is to blanket the state with the program, so then they would know how to apply. And often, we have to go out and meet with them because they're not even quite sure how to articulate what the problem is. And they may think it's this, but we say, well, maybe if it's this, but you should look at this and that. And then we can assemble and put together a kind of a program. But then we have to determine with them as to how much of that, what, say it's $25,000, do they put in $5,000? And, of course, when we work with rural communities in the state, they don't pay the overhead aspects. All they are really covering is salaries and benefits of the people that are involved.
Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I just have one more question, because it seems like something that we could go greater in depth, but we have such limited time. So, but my other question would be just what your relationship is with University of Minnesota Extension, and how would that then also be an add-on for what you do?
Ms. Thorbeck.
Well, often, actually, the Extension folks are recommending us to other communities. At the University of Minnesota, we are the only design center focusing on rural issues. And when we talk about rural, it's everything except the metropolitan area. And we often kind of are following Tom Stinson and Tom, you know, their notions of looking at regional aspects. And of course, in our mind, regions should really extend beyond state lines and everything else. But within the state, there are clusters, and so the programs kind of respond out of that. But it really has to come from the people. But we need to get the information out to them too.
Representative Pop.
More effectively than we have been.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Members, we're going to spend no more than five more minutes on this. We do have Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try to be brief, but thank you, Mr. Thorbeck, for presenting your information here today. And I just want to follow up on Representative Poppy's question about the University of Minnesota Extension and accessing them as your partners statewide, as being participants in your program. And I also want to thank Representative Morrow for bringing up the Center for Rural Policy Development. I think that's another good partner that you could tap into and multiply your resources in your process. And I really appreciate your efforts to, help us in rural Minnesota to, engender some greater economic development, with all of our resources. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Thorbeck. Just wondering here, for reading your letter here, how much do you interact with the counties throughout the state of Minnesota? I know we mentioned extension services, but that's been reduced somewhat, so now each county doesn't have a extension service per se. They have an area or region to go to for extension help. How much do you interact with the county boards as far as what you do at the University of Minnesota?
Mr. Thorbeck.
Well, we have made presentations to the Association of County Boards, and we are working with county boards on almost every project. I mean, in Wadena after the tornado, the city, the county, and the citizens were involved there, just like up in Roseau County. In Isani County, it was a citizens group that started a project with a grant from the Robert Woods Johnson Foundation, and that evolved with the county board into a park plan for the entire county. So I would say at almost every level, even when we talk with a city or a town, rural town, the connections to the townships and to the counties is very strong. We really try to encourage the thinking on a broader basis so that townships and county boards and town and city boards really are thinking collectively about the great opportunities they have in their area and what their assets are.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
All right. Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for you. Perhaps you touched on this a little bit and I missed it, but could you clarify for me how you determine when you're working with a community what their financial commitment will be? How do you determine that?
Mr. Thorbeck.
Well, sometimes we find that we've gone out, we've met with a group, we've outlined a project and a dollar amount, let's say $20,000, to bring the resources to do the project. And we know from the discussion that they don't have the dollars to do that. And so then sometimes we work with them and we contact, and we are with the McKnight initiatives, they've supported a lot of the things. Sometimes the counties have come in and helped support the project. And many times we are unable to do the project because the funding is just simply not there. And it's this discovery, I would say, over the time period, is that there is just this real need, and there's no planning and no design assistance way that small communities and township and nonprofit groups and whatever, the way that they can access it. And so that's how we try to do it.
Representative McElfatrick, follow-up?
All
right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thorbeck, for your testimony. We appreciate it. And I think, like Representative Morrow said, we can actually assist maybe making those connections with the Center for Rural Policy as well.
Yes.
And thank you for your testimony. Appreciate all that you do.
Thank you. If I may just say one thing more.
Yes, please.
Minnesota has some tremendous opportunities with all of the changes that are going on around the world. And I think if we can look at these things collectively, and I must say, too, it's not a rural issue. It's an urban and rural issue, and we need to kind of make these connections. And so I would just say design is a way to do that. So
very nice. Thank you. Very wise. Appreciate it. We do have a quorum. Representative Lemire moves the minutes dated February 9th. Representative Lemire, you also have an amendment to the minutes under members present to strike Hamilton Rod Chair and Poppy Jean. It is reflected that those two members were excused. Any Representative Lemire? All right, thank you. To the amendment, any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. To the minutes, any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor to approve the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Ms. Tesh, you move forward, please. Keeping up with tradition, as Julie or Ms. Tesh is moving to the front, keeping up with tradition, it is Dairy Day today, my friends. And I believe we have samples, is that right?
Yes.
All right, and I know that Representative or Chairman Junkie and Chair Otremba, we always had some nice recognition on this day. So, Arlen, can you help us out? Are they here? So, members, we do have samples. What do we have samples of? Milk?
Yes.
Very nice. I could use some right now. So, Arlen, maybe if we can pass that around or just set some out in the middle of the table, that'd be fantastic. So, Ms. Tesh, state your name and who you represent for the record, if you would, please.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julie Tesh, and I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. First off, make sure you get your three a day. I'm from a dairy farm, so take a few of them. Secondly, I'd like to, first off, thank you for allowing our FFA students a few weeks ago the opportunity to testify in front of all of you. I can't tell you what an honor that was for each of them, so thank you, Representative Poppy, for asking them all to testify. I told them all to put that on their resume, and so they are official. I said, you signed the board that Arlen gave you, so you're official. So it ended up being a really great day, and so I thank you all for giving them that opportunity. So as you know, I do a lot of work with FFA and with secondary education and ag literacy, and over the years we've done informational hearings on secondary, FFA, and ag literacy. And another aspect that MLC works with is also with our farm business management program around the state. The farm business management program is very important to the farmers around the state. Our instructors do some very critical education with them. And so today you're going to be hearing from a few people that work very closely with the program. And so basically informational based. But what I wanted to point out to you first is in front of you, you have hot off the presses. We picked it up this morning. Our blueprint that we've been working on for a while now from MLC, the Minnesota Ag, Food, and Natural Resource Education Blueprint. And we were set to release it on Thursday, and hopefully we'll have a hearing here in a little bit to go over more in depth some ideas for you in the future, but I would like to refer you to page 10. That's kind of what we'll be referring to today as the Farm Business Management Program. And this hearing kind of spun out of that. We've had working groups established since September trying to really look at the vision, the mission, and the bold steps for the future in the next 5 years. And so I just wanted to briefly go over with you on page 10 and 11, the vision for farm business management that this working group came up with. So this is a Meal C Function working group, is basically building farm business success one informed decision at a time. And you'll hear today from one of our instructors and one of the students about that information and decision making and how important that is. And you can read through the mission there, but have you look at the bold steps that were recommended by this working group. Number one is to develop a fiscally sound program with a common vision and mission among all stakeholders. So whether that's farmers, students, or farmers, teachers, administrators, legislators, common vision and fiscally sound. Number two, explore structural options to assure consistent statewide program management. And number three, market the program through business, state, and national partnerships. You're going to hear today that Minnesota is actually the leader in farm business management programming, and we have the preeminent leading database in the nation, if not the world, in farm management data. And so that's something that is very important to Meal C, is being able to market that and get more farmers involved in the program, but also be able to market what we do nationally as well. So with that, today, if you don't have any questions for me, I'll just tell you who's going to be you'll be hearing from.
Ms. Desch, we do have a number of testifiers,
yes.
So if you can help us mm-hmm. navigate through that, what I'd like to do is hold all the questions until the end.
Perfect.
And we do want to save 10 minutes. We were told from Mr. Ward from the dairy producers to testify at the end of this. And so
perfect.
I'm thinking if we saved about 20 minutes for questioning, potentially. And so at the bottom of the hour, then, if we could have all our testimony wrapped up.
Okay.
And one of the questions that I have for the testifiers is, what is our vision for agriculture in the Minsk system? So if they could address that as they come up as well. So if you could help us navigate through the order.
We can do that, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to call up our first three testifiers. We have Dr. Richard Jorger. He is a liaison with the Chancellor's Office dealing with farm business management. Dr. Keith Stover, president of South Central College in North Mankato, and Dr. Doug Allen, who is president of Ridgewater College in Wilmer, Minnesota. And then following them, we'll have an instructor and a student testify as well.
Okay. So welcome. Please state your name and who you represent for the district, and begin, please, or for the tape.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Dick Jorger, System Director for Agriculture for Minnesota State College and Universities.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Doug Allen. I'm the president of Ridgewater College, Wilmer and Hutchinson.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Keith Stover from South Central College with campuses in North Mankato and Faribault.
Welcome. So who would like to begin?
I will begin. And
if you could speak into the mic, please, if you could do that.
Okay,
that way it picks up on the tape as well.
I'm going to spend about 10 minutes giving you kind of a mountaintop view of the Minnesota Farm Business Management Program that's been around for about 60 years. It is the longest contiguous programmatic program in agriculture in the state, probably ever. And I think I can safely say that nationwide. So we need to be proud of this program. Very quickly here, a little bit of background. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the people. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the curriculum. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit, how does this program operate? And so we'll go ahead and jump into it. First of all, the ultimate purpose is to help our producers make quality business decisions. And we're looking at a magnitude here of a business of around $15 billion of raw product that transforms into $74 billion of added on value in this industry within the state. And so helping people be successful obviously contributes greatly to our economic wealth of our in the condition of our state at all times. The program objectives, they are in front of you, but let me just essentially say to us that what we're looking at is teaching producers how to keep quality records, how to make outstanding decisions so that indeed they sustain their business and become a very viable long-term business within the state. And in longer term, the very last one there, it says appreciate the relationship between individual business entity and economic, social, political, and physical environments impacting the industry. More than ever, that is a lot of what the program is doing as our society and agriculture becomes more complex. But let's talk about the students. The number one, the core of why we're here, which is the producers. With 80-some thousand farmers, we're currently serving right around 3,000. You'll see a little bit more of that. But this picture kind of points it out to you as it lays out the state, and you can see those dots that this is a couple years old, right around 3,500 farmers that are enrolled in agricultural or farm business management, lamb and wool, as well as specialty crop. And so that is a clear illustration of saying, wow, it is distributed all across the state. It's a program that impacts a lot of farmers, a lot of communities, a lot of education, colleges and such around the state. I want you to draw your eyes to the bottom right of this slide. Of the FBM lamb and wool people, this is a 2009 where we had 3,500 students involved there. On the right, it talks about the FBM students. On the left, it's about the Minnesota producer. So undoubtedly, the producers that work with our instructors work with the producers that are producing $100,000 or more predominantly. And so, and beyond that, 75% of the producers that we work with have a annual gross sales of around $250,000 or more. And so we've taken this and looked at this, and the presidents may say a little bit more about it. What about the rest of the student, the rest of the producers in Minnesota? And currently we're completing a study, of a statewide study, to give you that answer as to what kind of education, what kind of instructional media these people really desire. And so right now, that's who we are. We're working to learn more about all across Minnesota. We'll be reporting that to you shortly. How many students are involved? What's the trend? This slide depicts this starting back in 2002. And you can notice there we've gone from 3,900 down to an end of FY11. It was down to 3,100. Now, currently, the deans are suggesting that those numbers are 5 to 7% lower in the current fiscal year. And things attributing to that, number one, that change in instructors. Number two, people that just typically, you know, decide that they've gotten the education that they need. Thirdly, we've had some tuition increases that have contributed to that. And so we anticipate next year that this number is going to be a little bit softer than it is this year. Well, how about the guys and gals that teach it? We used to have, you say, in 2002, 95, that's in the blue or the left column in each year, we had 95. I can remember we had 120. And so the 108 means FTEs. What that means is they're working more than a full-time position. And so we got 95 professionals and 202 were doing the work of 108 as to how things come together. You'll notice at the end of FY11, that slid down to 68, and we're at 76. And so that is a trend that we see happening there. It's a question then about access, perhaps. So who provides the leadership here? In front of us, as we indicated, we have a couple of our presidents. And so the presidents are the folks that provide the leadership on the campuses for these programs, and they'll talk to you a little bit more. So you notice in the Northwest, President Tempty, Dr. Larry Lemblad, we have Dr. Doug Allen, Dr. Rick Shrub, President Keith Stover, and President Terry Leese. And so they provide that glue at each campus level to go ahead and guide these programs from this point forward. So, the people. Now let's talk about the curriculum. What is
to that point, excuse me, to that point, there used to be a central coordinator, if you will.
That's
so
right.
How's that being coordinated now? How are the regional deans addressing that? Well, to reshape the program, if you will.
Sure, to reshape it. I think I would turn that to my presidents, because they're the ones that are in the middle of that in their campuses. And so,
Chair Hamilton, I would just suggest that there's more collaboration going on in the system today. So the presidents are meeting monthly, and we've been meeting monthly for the last 3 years, trying to coordinate activities. And a more down-to-earth example of that is that Al Brudley is the dean for Minnesota West and South Central, so our two colleges are directly coordinated on a day-to-day basis. So I would just say, through the president's interaction, and that's regular interaction, we will be able to coordinate that in the future.
Thank you.
The question of what is taught. First of all, one of the things that's a hallmark of the program is that all instructors, all producers enrolled in the program, have access to a common curriculum. That common curriculum is placed on a website in which the instructors can download anything they need. They also contribute to that website. So there is a common curriculum in working with the individual farmer. It's a very individualized, tailored program, which means depending on where that producer is at, that instructor has been trained by their deans on how to facilitate their education planning and such. So common curricula, things are in a repository, it's tailored education depending on where they're at. One of the things I want to say a couple more words about quickly will be about the database. One of the things that's critically important, as we know, is in any kind of a program, is where are we, where are we headed, how are we doing? And so the Center for Farm Financial Management for many, many years is at the University of Minnesota has worked closely with our regional deans to help pull this data together and put it into a database in which, in full confidentiality, people can look at their own records and say, how am I doing compared to somebody else? Now, this is an onerous task. My deans recently, when I polled them, said it takes up to 8 weeks where they contribute to helping that get shaped over the period of a year, so that we have quality data there. The integrity of that data is extremely important for the producer, and as you notice down here, through annual reports and sorts and presentations, instructors use it, media uses it, Center for Farm Financial Management uses it, researchers, policymakers, agricultural lenders, educators, Minnesota Department of Ag. It's a very heavily relied upon database. And that is one in the country, I can assure you, that's there. So the database is really a core outcome of that education. And the farmers have been very generous to say, yes, you can use my data to help create these benchmarks, because everybody benefits from it. So there's some real common good that comes from the investment that the state makes in this whole effort.
And to that point as well, so saw the different regional areas. Is all that data go into one central location, so you have continued access all across the state?
That's a great question. I'll just go back to help focus our eyes. Each regional dean takes and cleans, we use the term cleans the data a couple times. Then it all comes into the Center for Farm Financial Management, where we work with a group of deans, and they go through and clean the data again. Once it's cleaned, it's pulled together, the analysis, the system-wide analysis gets done, then it goes back out. And the deans create their own regional analysis as they like also. But it does come to a central point. It's used, and the center is awesome in putting materials together that can be used by all of us. All kinds of reports, online accessibility, online analysis tools that we can use. So that's why everybody gets some value from that.
Thank you.
Well, one last piece then, program operation. So a little bit more detail, how does this thing work? From a standpoint of how do we keep it funded? First of all, tuition and fees. Depending on the college, it'll range from 45 to 60% of the total direct costs of the program is being run by the tuition of the enrollee. It all depends. State follow-on aid, the state puts some money in afterwards, which you hear about in right here in the legislature. It's on an FYE basis or on a unit basis, and it's attributable to the program, depending on how each college does that. Another piece that we work hard at is securing grants to buttress the cash flow challenges that we sometimes receive. And last couple years, we've written grants for $100,000. We've written grants to Minnesota Ag Ed Leadership Council, who you've heard about. And so we're constantly trying to find ways to further buttress the cash flow part of the farm business management. Another group of people that are very good in working with our producers is our agricultural lenders around the state. Many of them will provide some funding for some of their producers for the tuition that comes into play. Question you may have, you say, so what's the tuition about for a typical producer? Depending on the rates, $1,500 to $1,600 plus fees on an annualized basis. For those in a core program. So that's where that's at. The last two things I want to talk about, I'm actually going to go down one page, which you do not have in front of you. And what I want to share with you in 2010 is a group of people from around the state came together and said, you know what? You asked us how to make this program more financially efficient and educationally sound, and here's what they told us, the top five. Number one, implement alternative program and course delivery methods to build upon your strengths, find out what the producers want. As a result of that, we are conducting research and getting assistance from the Center for Rural Policy and Development and other folks to pull that data together to find out what producers really want. Secondly, there is also a desire. They're saying, let's see what's in the database. We've got this phenomenal database. Let's turn it into instructional materials that our instructors can use. That was number two. Number three, they said, hey, things are done in partnering. Explore new approaches to partnering and programming. And so we continue to do that. A fourth one is work with key partners to leverage economic development aspects of the program. We have phenomenal amounts of data. And so we're reaching out there where we can to work on that. And the last one is a comprehensive marketing program is what they told us. Okay. So those are the tools that the presidents have at their disposal that the task force people said, here's what we would like to see that does happen. One major change has happened, as we indicated, and presidents may speak to that just a touch. Back in about September, we made a little bit of a change here where the presidents are working the program on the front lines. And so with their teams, they're carrying the load on the curriculum, the programming, and so on and so forth. And that's what they spoke a little bit to, but that's a change in pace as to where we have been, and that is, going to provide some new opportunities that maybe we haven't had before, too. So those are my responses to this piece.
So either president, would you like to speak to this as well? And then I do have a number of members that would like to ask questions. And I think what we'll do, the way Ms. Tesh said, we'll have questions probably for the presidents and then maybe some for the students and the instructors. So sure. Please.
Representative Hamilton, again, for the record, my name is Doug Allen. I'm the president at Ridgewater College campuses in Willmar and Hutchinson. Ridgewater has, not surprisingly, given our location, been involved in ag education since before there was a Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system. Last year, our 11 full-time farm business management instructors served 550 farms, whose average net income last year was over $200,000. For Ridgewater, that farm business management program is a natural offshoot of having the largest post-secondary ag program in our system. We have over 200 students pursuing everything from the only dairy management program in the state to the first 2 years of an ag ed degree in collaboration with the University of Minnesota for students wishing to pursue a degree in ag education. It's not all about farm operations for us, though. We're seeing an explosion in careers in agribusiness. Services such as crop scouting, precision ag services, GPS soil sampling, satellite-controlled yield monitors, all those are common today. And all these extra services require more highly skilled and educated agribusiness employees. Currently, we estimate that there are 5 jobs for every graduate we have in agribusiness, and our placement rates have been at or 100% for the last several years. As proud as I am of our ag programs, I want to emphasize 3 things, and the first is to reinforce what Dr. Jerger shared with you, that this is a system effort. My colleague, President Stover, will tell you about some of the activities underway on his campus there at Central Lakes, or I mean South Central, sorry. And my colleague, President Lundblad, at Central Lakes would tell you about his Ag and Energy Center, and you're probably going to hear a little bit more about that. He's going to, yes. And President Ann Tempty, for instance, from Northland, would talk about her farm business management faculty and their efforts around specialty crops. And President Shrub in the South and President Lees could all tell their story as well. But this is a part of Chancellor Rosenstone's and the Board of Trustees' efforts, I believe, to provide an extraordinary education for all Minnesotans and to meet the needs of Minnesota's workforce. As you all know, agriculture is the second largest industry in Minnesota, and it's crucial, I would say, to the future of this state and the nation, and indeed, I would even say, to the world. And finally, if you'll permit me a little commercial, part of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities capital bonding proposal this year contains a project at Ridgewater College that will renovate our ag space. We'll be able to create an agronomy lab. We'll be able to update our classroom space for our students. And that project is really crucial to our ability to continue to meet the needs of the ag industry. So thank you for your time, and I'll stand for any questions, or we can do them at the end.
I think we'll hold off a little bit. We'll hear from President Stover.
Well, thank you, Representative Hamilton and committee members, for inviting me here to share my thoughts on agriculture and more specifically on FBM programming today. As you know, Representative Hamilton, I have a passion for the industry of agriculture, having grown up in ag, and an admiration for the people engaged as producers and educators who we're going to talk about today. I've had the opportunity to lead campuses with agricultural programming since 1976 in 3 different states. It doesn't change, by the way, when you cross the borders. As you know, farm families have not always encouraged their sons and daughters to return to the family farm. But today, our agribusiness enrollments are higher than ever before. And the growth over time has placed about 100 agribusiness, ag production, and ag education majors at our college, along with 42 ag service technicians as well. So we have 144 total agribusiness students in our organization. Well, naturally, farm business management, nationally, farm business management programming began in Faribault, Minnesota in the early 1950s. And I know that Representative Fritz wanted me to say that today. and, of course, Representative Fritz is a alumna of our college as well. Before our campus even existed, she went to the nursing program that was guided by the director of our college. And statewide includes several activities that contribute to its perennial success. So an education model, FBM is an educational model designed to transition our agribusiness students into successful producers. And those students could be coming out of the U of M or out of any one of our colleges or any one of our bordering state universities, into successful producers who contribute to the economic health and well-being of Minnesota and our local communities. Instruction tailored for our producers throughout their business cycles, careers, and then the development of world-class database for use in policy, business planning, research, and education. Higher education today is in the most economically challenging environment in its past 50 years. However, we know successful farmers fuel the economic health of our local communities and the state. When producers are successful, agribusinesses and small businesses are successful, and so go their communities. What must we do to sustain the program for the long term? The first thing we need your help with is to ensure a sound financial framework. We need to increase student access to our program. You saw all the producers listed here, and we have an opportunity to grow the number of producers who are served through our organizations. Our key is audience appropriate, and the appropriateness may be based on the age of our producers or the technology that's available to our producers. Traditional face-to-face instruction is, of course, part of our instruction, individualized for small and large groups. Online courses and seminars, internet instruction, and smartphones. All of those provide an opportunity for the future. We need to expand our partnerships with existing and new organizations and ensure instructional effectiveness. And I know that Doug mentioned a few minutes ago about Chancellor Rosenstone's framework calling on us to provide extraordinary education. Well, it's no different in farm business management. Our faculty are continually working in areas trying to develop new technology and ways to reach out to our farm families, to our producers, creating new models for delivery. So at this point, I think we're going to stand for questions, and then I would like to introduce one of our faculty members and one of our producers from South Central Minnesota. Okay. When the time's appropriate.
Right. President Stover, I think what we'll do is we'll have questions for the president's members, and then we'll let you, or we'll have you introduce the next testifiers, if that's okay. How can we be more responsive to the people that we serve, we as a system, in this farm business management program? How can we be more responsive to these producers? I'll stop right there. It's a wide open question.
Well, having grown up in agriculture, I think producers are always looking for new opportunities to partner, and probably some opportunities to interact with other farmers. Probably the most common thing in FBM is the technology we have today and the database that we have today, and how farmers can look at that database along with their financial advisors, their bankers, and create a model that helps them continue to grow and prosper. And let me just back up a minute and say, for all of those students, the 144 students that we're graduating from our program, quite a number of those people are going to go back to family farms. Some, however, may not have the opportunity to go back to family farms. So how do we create an opportunity for young people who are graduating from our programming, our agribusiness and ag production programs, to get into ag at a time when it is the strongest sector of the American economy? And I think we have to look for ways to do that. And our farm business management program, connected with our agribusiness production programs, is one way that can happen. We just need to grow that.
And to that point, I brought up the question about central coordination, whether it's data. You brought up the data piece as well. Are we ensured that will continue to happen, that we'll still have that data available? All the data will be pooled, it'll be clean, it'll be reliable, and the same thing, that the systems will be communicating back and forth between each other as well.
You know, I'd like to just make one response, and I'm not giving Doug much of a chance here, but as I indicated, I've been in technical education clear back to 1971, but became our campus director in 76. And in the three different states I worked, there were always, in technical education, they were state supervisors. So you had a director who guided the campus, like the presidents do today of the technical campuses and the comprehensive campuses. But we had one remaining state, what I would say is a state supervisor, and that was Dr. Jorger. Now, that's not a title we use today, but if you looked back in history, there were state supervisors for every occupational category. Those have all gone away, and the last state supervisor in this system was Dick Jorger in agriculture, and I think it was important to have Dick in that role. But of course, as you know, well, for most of the 12 and a half years that I've been in this state, we've had reduction after reduction after reduction. And so at our college, our allocation is the same allocation we had when the former president, 15 years ago, was our president, between 1997 and 1998. That's the allocation we're living on today at our college. So we've had to go to students, farm business management students, but the children of these producers, and say your tuition's got to go up. And it's gone up significantly. But at the state office, at the system office, they've had to make reductions as well. And so it's not been easy for any of us. And so we've all had to become more efficient.
Yeah, I would concur with what President Stover said. I think there are some opportunities for us, though, to collaborate. I mean, he mentioned new technology and the opportunity for that. I also think our producers, our agribusiness partners in the state, are stepping up to the plate as well. And I think there's great potential for the collaboration to occur between higher ed and industry to meet our needs as well. And I think we have, I could use one example from our college. We partner with AgriLiance and provide some precision application training for our students, chemical application training. And they provide us with equipment. They provide our students with internships. And as a consequence, our students can oftentimes step right into employment. So it's a valuable partnership, and I think we'll continue to see those kinds of partnerships arise. And I do, I'm not, I would not suggest that online education is a panacea, but I think there are obviously ways that farming is changing, and I think our educational approach has to change as well. And I have every confidence in our faculty being able to lead that change. So,
thank you. Representative Anderson, Paul.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question for Dr. Jorger, and I don't know if you have the numbers to answer this, but using data from your database from farm management, could you give us kind of a snapshot picture of the state of agriculture in Minnesota? And I guess, being this is Dairy Day, looking maybe especially at dairy, how has dairy been the past year? What's the prospects coming ahead in the future? Just a general picture of the state of ag in Minnesota.
Well, I think I have a more quality person or a more qualified person to say it than one of your next speakers. So I'm going to ask Gene to do that. Okay, when it comes to where the dairy and such is at, we do know we're on trajectory to have a net farm income that's very high broadly across the state. But I want the committee to acknowledge and understand that if you do a 15-year rolling average, okay, there and look at that net number, you'll find out when you pay the family living, depreciation, addition to capital, even though that number may look big, I think I encourage all of us to acknowledge what the realities are today in any kind of a business. So you're going to see that rolling number of people's net farm income is obviously on a increasing trajectory. Acknowledge, however, that we're in a situation environmentally here. If we don't have water, we will have an interesting year, won't we? So that's the ups and downs of the industry of agriculture that we have to be aware of. So I'm going to let Gene to talk about that because he's out in the countryside more than me. Thank you for the question.
Representative Anderson, follow-up. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for reminding us about the intersections between the committee's work here and the Higher Ed Committee, where we've been struggling with the appropriations I think the presidents have talked about. And my question is actually a very brief one. How long is the Farm Business Management Program? How long does it take to complete it?
I think each of the colleges probably has just a little different model. At South Central, we have two 30-credit certificates to get to an outcome. And then beyond that, we have students who've chosen to continue to work with our faculty in some interest-based kind of curriculum. So that can be designed individually for the producers. And I'm not sure, let me just give you some numbers on that. From South Central, in 2005 and 6, we had 592 students, 632 the following year, 647, 648, dropped down to 625, and now this past year, 615. So we've had some growth in the interest of those producers and getting to an end outcome, but we still have a lot of farmers who are signing up for the first time and are going to go after those 230 credit certificates.
Representative Morrow? Anything else? Representative Anderson, Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, I'm looking at your book here in the bottom of page 10 in the book. It says that you have a total of 65 farm business management education programs or instructors, but then on the graph that you gave us, it shows that you have 68. And I'm just wondering if there's a miscue on the way it was written up and the way the thing was drawn. So that's one question I have. And then the other question was, it says it's serving 3,000 farm owners and operators and then others interested in farming. I'm just wondering what category those others interested in farming include, because I know there are different categories, but I'm not sure what they would be.
You bet. Dr. Correct Jordan. Number 68 instructors. Okay, that's a typo.
Okay, that's a typo. Thank
okay,
you.
The second layer, as far as other people that are interested, an example will be next week in South Central, for example, they're having a conference, and they're going to invite to that conference not only producers, but there will be existing students, but there will also be agribusiness people, policymakers, and whatever. They will come to a lot of those activities and be informed also as people that do attend. So also within that, when the instructors are out, for example, say they're working in within a farm situation, it's not only going to be perhaps the farmer who enrolled in the class, there might be one of the employees sitting there, the spouse might be there, and so additionally they're going to value a little bit from that interaction of that education.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Jorger, you know, farming has changed dramatically from, if I go back to the 40s and 50s, it used to be dairy, beef, pigs, chickens. Now we're talking a major different new things that have come in. Of the 3,000 Minnesota farm owners and operators, what is I'm guessing that dairy and beef and, you know, pigs and stuff are still your major areas of production, but what other areas are coming in or starting to show up as something to be for us to be aware of and be looking at?
Yeah, that's a great question. Again, through partnerships with the Minnesota Department of Ag, University of Minnesota, working on the specialty crops. Okay, we have one specialty crops instructor who works with people with fruits and vegetables across the state. We also have a lamb and wool program. It's an online program that goes nationwide as well as within the state. So we've seen that the unprecedented value of a sheep today and a goat that we haven't had for years, so you're going to see a little bit of increase in that as that continues on there. The other piece that we're doing some work right now investigating the educational needs of our immigrant farmer friends across the state. What kind of education do they need? Because they indeed are contributing to our farmers markets in a huge way, as well as their produce is going through some of the wholesale streams. And so those are coming up. There's also some innovative new farming projects such as the Northfield Project, again working with our immigrant population to try to come up with new economic models, and so we're monitoring and working with them a little bit too.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one last question. I think they mentioned there was 80,000 farms in the state of Minnesota, and you're dealing with 3,000 Minnesota farm owners and operators. Is that the max that you can, based on what you have now in place for educational facilities across the state? And if not, what is preventing us from getting moving into those 80,000 that you said that we need to be looking at?
Well, I'm just going to prime the pump and turn it over here. I can see these guys have a response also. We are doing a statewide study to find out what their educational needs are, what their instructional preferences are, so that indeed we can give these folks the data and say, now how do you want to attack it? So I can tell they have some ideas.
Well, just from Ridgewater's perspective, I mean, we're doing a number of things. Right now we're looking at creating a new program in, we're calling it a Young Farmer Transitions Program, to look at succession planning across the state. We're optimistic that that's going to be a way that we'll reach out and serve people that are maybe not currently being served. I also do think that there is some potential as we collaborate with each other, and I'm talking about all the folks that have farm business management programs, that we're going to be able to achieve some efficiencies that are going to allow us to serve more of those producers. I also think that we're, unfortunately, it's not a story that we've done a great job of telling very well. Our instructors, and you'll hear from one shortly, will tell you that they make a huge difference in the productivity and the success of the operators that we work with. And I think the more that we can do that, the more success those folks will meet. And I know that if you talk to lenders and others who suggest that their borrowers take our program, it's because it leads to greater success. And I think the better we can tell that story, the more people we're going to come into our program. I personally, I'm optimistic that we'll be able to serve more of those 80,000 than we're currently doing, because there's a big gap right now. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Vogel, Torkelson, and Szymanski. We're going to spend 7 more minutes on questions for these testifiers, then we're going to move to the next testifiers. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here, Presidents, especially Dr. Allen. Thank you for coming in from Wilmer. It's good to see you today. A couple of questions I have is, one is, what is the average age of the students or the farmers that are enrolled in the program?
Representative Vogel, from our, at Ridgewater, we have about half of our students that have taken more than 60 credits and about half less than. I can't tell you a precise age of those farmers, but you know, based on the number we have in our program who have advanced to those advanced certificates, taken more than 60 credits, I would say we're probably on the high end in the 50s or 60s for a lot of our producers.
Okay.
Statewide average is typically 45 to 47. It kind of rotates in there. The study that we're currently doing now of the FBMs, we're also studying the FBM students. The average age of the respondents is 42. The average age of the statewide farmers on our statewide study is 58. So the students that we do work with typically tend to be a little bit younger, too, than the average age across the state.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One little follow-up on that is, it obviously it's making an impact in their farming operations. Then, and to see the average net income, as you had mentioned, at about $200,000. That's great to see. The other question. Well, one more thing. I just got to say that it's also a poultry day on the Capitol. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that in honor of the turkey growers in Candiwhite County. But so that said, are you turning away any farmers from the program at this point, or are you able to accept all that come in?
President Allen.
Representative Vogel, we're not turning anybody away, to my knowledge, we wouldn't do that. I think the growth in our post-secondary program is a testament to that as well. I do want to say one caveat about that average income, and Dr. Jorger mentioned that too. It does vary by sector. I mean, obviously our crop folks are doing very well right now, but if you talk to dairy, if you talk to livestock, not as well. And that's why that's an average. So we have some people way on the high end, and we also have some people that are, as Dr. Jorger mentioned, not seeing that kind of a net income return. But
Vogel, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was out of the room for a while, so perhaps this question has been already asked. But I'm a member of the Southwest Farm Business Management Association, which is partially sponsored by the Extension Service. I'm curious if there's a relationship between your program and that program as far as sharing data or analysis or any other relationship there might exist.
Thank you for the question. Yes, there is a combination of data, and Dale Nordquist is here in the audience and perhaps can speak specifically to it, but the collaboration is pooling the data together at some points to inform one another a little bit. So that piece does go on. We also touch base with these instructors that work with you guys from time to time. Also, we also work with them in some of the national activities that we're involved with. And so we do keep in touch.
Representative Torkelson?
I would just like to note that I have found out today that I'm above average in at least one respect. I'm 59, and my average farmers are 58.
We always knew you're above average. Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also increasing the average recent enrollee in the Farm Business Management Program. So thank you, gentlemen, for being here today. Two questions, not necessarily related, but I work in the specialty crops area, a fruit grower. And your instructors, as we get more interest in specialty crops, and I anticipate your instructors are all gaining in their knowledge in those fields as well to be able to assist their students. If you could address that issue. And then we talked about the 3,000 current enrollees in farm business management. Do we have an estimate of how many have graduated from the program? And, out of the 80,000 farmers, how many have completed their program already?
Let me first respond to your question about updating. One of the instructors' knowledge of their technical knowledge and their business knowledge. First of all, it's a farm business management education program where the greatest focus is put upon being able to understand, teach, and extend people in the business management side of the things. The specialty crop program, we have one instructor, and I'm not sure who you're working with, that specializes in specialty crops. And that's Dr. Thaddeus McCammont out of Northland. And if you have the pleasure to work with him on a technical sense, I know you're very satisfied. With regard to the professional development is what I wanted to say about all of the FBM instructors. In the venues I've been a part of in ag education over my career, there's no group that has more access to professional development than our FBM instructors. They do meet monthly. They have they attend conferences. They have a professional development budget that each of these presidents gives each of them. They obviously have a lot of access to it. So I think you're going to see it to continue to increase. One other thing that we learned, and I appreciate you mentioning this, is in our statewide study, is we're finding out what it is that people do want to learn in specialty crops. We've done a special study that we haven't gotten written up yet, but we've looked at the data. And we asked the specialty crop producers last spring, what is it that you want in professional development? So we're using that. That's what the presidents asked for. They said, get us the data of what the producers across Minnesota want, and so we can go ahead and take a look at the programming. So we're doing that. Yeah, great question.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And others have asked this maybe in a little bit different fashion, but talking about course completion, I'd like to ask about just how you evaluate the outcome and measure the effectiveness for the program as a whole and for the individual students.
We'd like to take that one.
Well, I think I'm going to turn that one to the presidents because of the academic side.
President Stover?
Yeah, I think Gene Kuntz can probably speak to the specifics coming out of the program. From a statewide or a college perspective, outcomes in this particular program are not the same as they are in other programming. And very honestly, I think when this program was started, it started in school districts. Well, so did the technical colleges start in the school districts, but it was an offshoot, and it didn't come in until later. And again, Gene Kuntz was in the delivery model at the time, so he'll be better equipped to answer it. But I think there was some difficulty bringing this particular program into the credit model. So it's into the credit model, We have these two certificates. I would just tell you from our college, 56% of the students that we've had come through the program complete the 60 credits. Okay, so we've got a 56% completion rate there. But the other point is very few choose to do the actual graduation. And I'm not sure we've ever had a student walk in graduation, maybe one or two in my 12 and a half years. Mm-hmm. So very few choose to do the actual graduation piece. But a high percentage of our students do complete the full 60-credit program, so the two certificates at our college.
Representative Poppy? Or
thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, as maybe others know, I do work at a Minsky institution, and I know that there's a lot of discussion about how do you evaluate an outcome, how do you evaluate that something's successful, and usually that's done by a certificate, diploma, degree, you know, some sort of completion, something that says this is what's happened. And so I'm just curious about, you know, what that leads to if you aren't able to then say this was a completion, this was the outcome, this was, you know, how can you state that it's an effective measure or any kind of measure? So I don't know, maybe the instructor is a better person to answer, but I'm just curious because I, you know, that can lead to problems if you're not going to be able to evaluate it and be able to indicate that the outcome was successful.
President Stover?
Sure. I'm not sure I'll be able to answer that question. I think it's been a challenge, as I've already indicated. It's a challenge when you have producers who can choose. I mean, they're in business right today, mm-hmm. and they can pick and choose the coursework they want to enroll in, and they don't need to choose to complete a certificate to continue to be in the program. They continue to work with their instructors, and again, I think we have a producer and an instructor here who can do a better job of answering that question. So, you know, to be completely transparent, I think all the presidents have said, is there a better model for delivery here? Should it be delivered through what we call our Center for Business and Industry, where we reach out to 15,000 individuals every year from our college alone, helping them with incumbent workforce instruction. So should that, would that be a better fit in that model rather than a certificate or degree model? And it may well be. I don't think we have the answer to that. We know we're improving the lives of producers and their families. We know that. We just can't put a handle on it through a normal practice of looking at graduations and completions.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just kind of a separate question, so I appreciate the opportunity to be able to ask it. According to this map, it looks as though the border, that you have maybe quite a number of students in Iowa, maybe students in other areas, or is it just that it's skewed on the map? And I'm curious about that. If there are Iowa students, are they? How does that work exactly?
I put the dots on the map. Yeah, no, I didn't. There's relationship between the various colleges and their bordering counties, and frankly, I haven't been in there to know exactly the details. But it's a fair question. You have to ask your own college and.
Being a border college, I mean, I'm right. curious if we have, yeah. Yeah, are we dealing with students that are in Iowa that are farming?
Yes. Ours are the red dots.
President Stover.
So ours are the red dots.
President Stover.
So, yes, and we have,
thank you.
You know, we have 560 students. A portion of those students reside in Iowa. And we have regular students who come to our program during the day, our other degree programs from Iowa as well. So there are out-of-state students in both sectors. And I'm looking to Gene over there for the nod, and he indicated, of course, that was true. So,
yeah. Thank you. Representative Ward, that'll be the last question here before the other testifiers come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just take a moment. Dr. Allen, indicated that there were a number of colleges doing their own thing and the farm business management, and certainly at Central Lakes up in Brainerd, President Lundblad is very involved. And members, Representative Lemire put out this, and myself put out this handout of what's happening at Central Lakes College with our farm business management up there. But each program is special and unique. Like we have a research looking at hydroponics, vegetables, growing of vegetables. We're the only one that has an ag and energy center. And so each campus is very special and unique and has, you know, situations that they're looking at individually as well. So I just wanted to mention that all of the campuses are, you know, very individualized with their specialized programs as well, and appreciate the opportunity to just mention that as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ward. And thank you to the testifiers. We'll ask the other ones to come up and stick around in case we have more questions and more time at the end, if you would, please.
So we have Gene Kuntz, a faculty member from Faribault, who, by the way, he wouldn't say this. That's why I have to introduce him. He produces more than one FYE. He's one of those faculty members who overproduces. And along with him is Paul Liebenstein, I was told to pronounce that, from Dundas, who's a dairy producer. And what a great day to have a dairy producer here at the Capitol.
Yes, thank you. So welcome. Please state your name, who you represent for the record, please, and begin.
Gene Kuntz, Farm Business Management Instructor, Faribault South Central College.
Welcome.
I'm Paul Liebenstein. I'm a student there. I'm a dairy farmer in Dundas.
So welcome as well. And we're going to say thank you for all the milk that you guys handed out today. So, nice treat.
Good. Well, I'm a farm business management instructor, and I'm going on my 18th year of doing that. I used to be a high school instructor, did that for 10 years. Started at Forest Lake, spent a couple years there, went to Waterville, spent 5 years there. Land O'Lakes called, said, you know, go work as an agronomist. So I did, left. Came back, 1983-4. To Waterville, taught 6 more years. Land O'Lakes called again, went left. Then I came back and had made the best decision of my life. Came back to Faribault, 1995. Started as a farm business management instructor, and I work with adult learners, and that's what I discovered immediately as I started working with farm and business management. My folks don't come into me, our farm families working for us, looking for a degree. They're looking for direction in their life, in the life world, their business. They're looking for a direction in terms of how to help make decisions, as we call it, the farm management decision process. And our core principles is making sure that we have a standardized record-keeping system. We start up with an initial balance sheet, monitor the cash and income and statements during the year, lay down an ending balance sheet. Can we support what occurred between the two, our growth or disappearance of wealth? And then step further, take a look at that and start drilling down to the enterprise analysis to find out what it costs us to raise a bushel of corn, beans, 100 weight of milk, a ton of beets. And that's what it's all about. And then the process starts over again. How can we tweak this? How can we change this? How do we stay in business? I work with 68 farm families. I went my file a year ago. My file has 120 in them. I've had 60 students in and out of my program in a mere year or 2 years. Because they came in, where am I going? And in 2 years, we've got them out of business. With the right way. Because that was the program of support. I really don't know why one of Paul's neighbors, he came in a program for a year. He was out in a year. He sold the cows. That's all you need to know. Was he profitable with cows anymore? He's a very profitable grain farmer now. But that's what he used the program for. 20 of my 68 students have been with me for 18 years. They don't want a degree. They've all gotten their diplomas, but they keep ongoing because they're interested in the management decision process. They're adult learners, highly focused, highly self-directed. When they come in, they want dialogue. They want a participatory learning process, and they get that. And we get into relationships that last for a lifetime. And that's, I've been called, I've received 2 or 3 calls over my 18 years. I get the call, she left me. I'm the first one to know. We've got a divorce. We've got a long thing ahead of us. So we get into those kind of relationships. And of the 68 students I work with, 30 are dairymen. grainer, then we got grain farmers. There are those 30 dairymen, five were organic dairies that I had an opportunity to work with after them receiving a scholarship to reduce their tuition for a period of 5 years from the Department of Ag, and they're staying with me now, even though the subsidy's gone. And I've just acquired five new specialty crop people over the last spring. I got an apple grower, and I got two wine growers, and I got an aroni berry grower, and I got a CSA vegetable grower. And we're taking them through a mini records management course, and they're getting 80% of their tuition bought down by the state of Minnesota. And I just closed my first wine grower yesterday, and my next apple grower is tomorrow night. But I expect those people to be in program maybe a year, and that's it, because I want them to understand what a balance sheet is, income statement, balance sheet at the end, understand that, you know, you got records for taxes and you got records for business management, okay? And that's what we're about, and that's what we like to take people through. And, well, I'll leave it at that. That's what I do, and that's what our program has been.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul Liebenstein. I must be one of those slow learners that you're kind of wondering about, because I've actually been a student with Farm Business Management for, I'm thinking, it's a little over 30 years. I started out with in high school out of the ag program, and then carried that on to the adult ag program. A lot has happened in those years. We went from 16 cows to 400. We went from the accounting book, where they spent a lot of time teaching us how to fill in all the right places, and now it's gone through a couple different computer programs, and they've taught us how to use QuickBooks. We use them for a lot of different things. It's mostly financial and business planning, but as you've heard already, a lot of these, the financials, it takes a lot of time to get down to those real numbers that we really need to know. We need to know those break-evens, and we do that by enterprise so we can know exactly how much it costs us to produce that 100 weight of milk. We have to have all this information for the bankers and for tax planning. They help us with our cash flows. And of course, my favorite, I don't know if it's Gene's favorite, but I like to run a lot of what-ifs. Even as to take it out, we did one last year to try and project this out 10 years, what will happen with our farm as we look at some of the trends that are occurring right now. And that's kind of where I'm using them. I'm trying to figure out, I'm 51, I've got, you know, our barn is 20-some, 10 years, we're both going to be wore out. Mm-hmm. Are we shutting down, or are we gearing up? I've got two daughters, and I need to decide how this is working, and this is where I'm relying on the VOTEC for a lot of these new help with information and business strategies, I guess. We also, Gene, or they touched on it earlier, I guess, we use peer comparisons, where we're comparing to like-sized dairies in our same area. You know, it's kind of a fun group to get together. We're all, and maybe it's a little bit unique to dairy, but dairymen are usually pretty open with their records and numbers because we don't feel like we're competing really with the neighbors. So, I mean, they usually, you know, in that setting, why you can get some real information and share some things that are working and what isn't working. So, a very important part of that. I guess a couple other things that they do down there that we use somewhat too is they run the test plots with a number of different combinations, whatever the student interest kind of is, populations, row widths, different chemicals. And whatnot, and it's not just the test plots. They can also pull that out of their records. You've seen the map with all the farms on it, and they can pull those out. Also, some estate planning work and whatnot. And then we've used them in marketing classes. It's becoming a more complex, I don't know, system all the time, I guess. And so we need some help keeping up to date on all these things. Why? I hear this completion that you get a certificate or whatnot. I guess I'm not thinking that I'm ever going to know it all, and so I need to continue to get this up. And those young guys that got the certificates are coming right behind us. They're a competition, so you got to help us guys here kind of stay with them too. So you know, just agriculture has probably never been in as rapidly changing environment as it is right now, and the stakes have never been higher. So we rely on them quite a bit. Thank you.
Mr. Liebenstein, 16 cows to 400 was quite a jump. So by being enrolled in this program, what type of value did that bring to you as far as helping you with the decision-making process in order to make that continued growth? How valuable is this program to you?
Well, it's very valuable, and you know, you got to understand there was a couple stages in that,
sure,
in there. But I think early on in my, you know, in keeping these records and going through this, it kind of showed me where my strengths were. And, you know, we always made money with the dairy cows when we were milking 40 cows and running 500 acres. And we didn't always make money on the crops. And that would be, you know, it kind of showed where our strengths were. And as a young guy and young family wanting to, you know, buy our own farm and whatnot, it kind of gave us some direction on which we should be heading. And so it's very key in my decision making.
So if you weren't enrolled in this program, do you have any idea what route you would have taken? Would you have still expanded in dairy cows or not, I guess? Do you know?
Well, I probably would have, because that's my first...
That's your love?
Yeah. But it just because I like it doesn't mean the bank's going to borrow me money on that. So, I mean, the proof is there, and so... You know, that's how it's got to work.
That's right. Thank you. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do want to welcome Mr. Kuntz and Mr. Liebenstein from my district. And I also want to comment, too, that as I'm sitting here listening to Gene Kuntz, I think about what a valuable person you have been to our community and to our farmers in particular. And you know, when I say his name, I almost have to bow, because that's how important he really is to this. But he is so humble he would never say that. So thank you for your 18 years, is it there? And then Mr. Liebenstein as well. I understand. I know right where your farm is. And I'm very pleased that you are in the program, and that farmers of your age, and mostly, you know, in your age bracket, are given the opportunity to work with and learn from Mr. Kuntz at South Central College. As in the role that I'm in, I meet with many people from all walks of life, and it's amazing to me how important, when I look at and compare the changes in agriculture and other businesses as well, but the changes in agriculture, which are almost overnight, and the trying to keep up with it at our age and trying to get a handle on it and learn and keep the records so that you can go to the bank and you can be productive and make money and stay in farming, I think is of great importance. And I cannot stress enough that the funding that goes towards this type of education is very vital in my community down in, and Representative Kath as well. We have Rice and Steele County folks who do go to the college and who are farmers, and we have a tremendous farming community in Rice and Steele County. So thank you. I'm very grateful to both of you.
Thank you. Representative Keel.
Well, thank you. I find this program to be very important, and I wanted to share with you that I am part of the our farm is part of the Northland Community College up in northwestern Minnesota. And I wanted to point out, when you're talking about thinking about what you're going to do in the future with your children, our son has come home, and this ag business program has been very beneficial for him to start to consider farming. And in fact, he has been able to procure a farm loan so that he can buy land now also. And that is part of our requirement, is that he is part of farm business management. And I just think it's been a very, very effective program. And I would agree with you that we don't look to graduate. We just look for the the education and the help that is very good for our farms. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. And just like the testifier said, Mr. Liebenstein, just because he enjoys doing it doesn't mean the bank's always going to buy into it. We need proof. We need the data. We need the records. I want to thank you both very much for all that you do. Thank you for your testimony as well. And, you know, like I said, we're supporting Dairy Day here as well, so welcome to the Capitol. Any other questions? Mr. Ward did say he only needed 5 minutes, so we could take another question if you had one, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just the question again about a thumbnail sketch of the scene of agriculture, especially dairy.
Okay. I'll address that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson. We're probably, this southern Minnesota data, west central Minnesota didn't get rain in the Montevideo Grand Falls area. They've got yields that we didn't achieve. We're probably down 25 bushels on corn in southern Minnesota, period. 2 year averages of 20, you know. Beans, 40 bushels, period. Ain't going to happen. It's just didn't get rain. Dairymen this year probably make $2 a hundredweight. Now that's up a dollar from last year. Certainly a lot better than it was 3 years ago when we ate $4 a hundredweight. Okay, so but we're not looking at a very robust year coming now. We're probably looking at break even for the next year, if not less than that. We'll put together a third consecutive year of robust farm earnings. We've never seen that before in this country. We've never seen three robust years. This year won't be as robust as last, but it'll be right next to it. And we're talking about literally $150 to $200 an acre net return on crops. Phenomenal number. 15 years ago, we got by on $50 an acre, yeah. And 25 of that came from government payments. Yeah. I mean, seriously, you know, that's the reality. And so if you see green new steel out in the fields, that's why it's there. It's good on the farm these days. Hog folks did very well this year. In fact, probably is good enough to pick up the loss in earnings they had 3 years ago. Yeah. Could almost make it up in a year. Yeah. Beef, hold on your belts. Beef is in short supply, and it's going to be $2 a pound on the hook in a few months. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're at. And I'd like to address one other question that was asked. We do, in a formalized fashion, assess our students to give some kind of rigor to what we do. We assess them on the core principles of our program. And at the end, we like to say, what impact financially did this program have on you? And at South Central, by assessing 89 of our students, the average student responded that their value in the program, they received $31,570, up from $18,000 from the previous year. So there is a little bit of rigor in what we do. We, you know, I don't care if we graduate, but we do care if we're at where we need to be on assessment with self-assessment and indirect assessment with our students on it. 6 times over their enrollment in the first 6 years.
Very nice. Thank you. I liked your comment, too, about not only helping them to become more profitable, but also understanding the event they're not and if they need to make a change with their operation. Yeah, very nice. Thank you so much for all that you do and your testimony. Greatly appreciated. Next, we'll call up Mr. Ward. And, is Mr. Luneman here as well? Oh, there he is. Well, come on up if you'd like to say a few words also. Now, Mr. Ward said, I said, we're going to give you, you know, an hour. And he said, no, I only need 5 minutes. I said, well, then we're going to squeeze 15 in here and rake you over the coals a little bit. But no, I'm teasing. 5 minutes. Please state your name, who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Ward. I represent the Cooperative Network. And Cooperative Network is a trade association that works with cooperatives in Minnesota and the state of Wisconsin. And Cooperative Network, along with Minnesota Milk, co-host Dairy Day at the Capitol, and it's a partnership that's been working well for Dairy Day at the Capitol, but it's also a partnership that goes beyond the city of St. Paul and out to rural Minnesota, because Minnesota milk producers produce the milk, cooperatives process that milk and add value to the milk and the products like the fluid milk you see here today, cheese, butter, and things like that. So we're the ones that add the value to the milk produced by the Minnesota milk producers. Couple of the issues that you will be seeing at some point in time, maybe not this session, but maybe sometime in the future, I would like to bring your attention to. One is a concern of us as the Agricultural Growth Research Innovation Fund. As the ethanol producer payments are phasing out, We want to make sure that the money that was going to the ethanol plant remains in agriculture, so you can use it in a number of different agriculture programs that will benefit the agriculture producers in the state of Minnesota. And I put a commercial in for one of those programs, the Livestock Investment Grant Program, is a program that's been very successful. Each year there's been more applicants for the grant program than there's been money available for the grant program, so that would be one program that we would like to see funding reinstated for a program like the Livestock Investment Grant Program. And if you really want to be bold and brave, you should turn it into a tax credit, and I think you get much more mileage from a program as a tax credit than a grant program. We appreciate your past support and future support for the Rural Finance Authority, the bonding dollars for the Rural Finance Authority. It goes a long way to helping rural Minnesota. Issue that we would appreciate your support in the past, but also needs a lot more work, is the environmental permitting process here in the state of Minnesota. Some cases it's created roadblocks for producers in their wishes to expand. They can have the best plans, the financing lined up, but then the permitting process, they run into a roadblock and their plans go for naught. In a lot of cases, producers choose not to expand because of the difficulty of the permitting process. So I think we need a more clear, consistent, science-based program and make the permitting decisions on. And so I like to say we need to create a roadmap for both local governments and producers in how they go through the permitting process. One can look across the river to the state of Wisconsin, and where they have a statewide, where the permitting process is based on statewide science-based standards. And it's been very successful where Wisconsin has had a record milk production of 26 billion pounds. And a lot of that's come in the last 5 years since the permitting program and other programs that instituted, like a tax credit, were instituted in Wisconsin, have helped the dairy industry expand. And I always like to point out that Wisconsin, it can be done. We have 70 producers that have applied and received permits and expanded their operations, and not one of those producers has had an environmental problem. So you can balance the needs of the producers and the needs of the environment and have a well-run program.
Mr. Ward, what size were those farms?
It goes anywhere. We start at 500 animal units is where we start our permitting. So it's gone from anywhere from, you know, that producer that's at 50 cows and wants to go to 250 to 500 cows. We have a couple farms that are up in the 5,000 and 6,000 cow range that have gotten permits through that plan.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Ludeman, anything to add?
Pat Ludeman, president of the Minnesota Milk Producers and dairy farmer from Todd County. Yes, I just give a brief synopsis of the dairy industry, and Mr. Kuntz covered quite a bit of it already. But
I know it, and he's extremely humble, too. Do you notice that?
2011 was a very good year for dairy farmers, and we did have very high expenses, but we also had basically record milk prices, which should help the bottom line, should help the state of Minnesota. I think some people on the farms will be paying taxes. But anyway, 2011 was a good year, but the dairy industry runs in cycles. It runs into 3 to 4 year cycles. If you look back in 2009, I was probably giving a really ugly report after that year, where dairy farmers across the U.S. lost a third of their equity in 1 year. And so 2011 is just 1 year to help recover some of that and be on the mend and look to the future. As far as Minnesota goes, our cow numbers are holding steady at 468,000 cows, which is 2,000 cows less than last year. And we've been staying at about that level for several years now. And as we look back, that's about half the cows of what we had 30 years ago. But the milk production in the total pounds is pretty similar. Last year it was 8.9 billion pounds of milk sold by farmers for processing in Minnesota, and we have 4,435 dairy farms today, which continues to slowly decline, but you know, at least we've leveled it out somewhat from the declines we've had in the past. Now, the stable milk production that we have in Minnesota, well, we can say that's good, but the milk production in the United States is rising, and so Minnesota is losing its standing. We used to be fifth, then we were surpassed by Idaho, which moved us to sixth, and now last year we were surpassed by Texas. So even though they had a drought of record proportions, they still outpaced us in milk production. So we need to look at, you know, even though we're stable, why are others pulling ahead of us? What do we need to do in Minnesota? Now, we have assets in Minnesota, unlike many other places other than maybe our sister state, Wisconsin. We have water, we have feed, we have dairy farmers of all types and sizes, which we need. And we have the infrastructure to support our dairy farms, cheese plants that have capacity that's going unused. And we've got modern technology coming. We've got robotic milkers going in Minnesota, robotic calf feeders, which I just put up a facility here this fall and have calves in and don't have to go out and suffer through all that hutch misery when it's 30 below. Oh, wait a minute, it hasn't been 30 below this year. But as we modernize in Minnesota, is this going to be the place where we want to dairy? Are the cows going to be here? How are we going to leverage our assets? So, ways that the state of Minnesota can help, and we need to think about $15,000 of economic activity per dairy cow times 468,000, which creates 40,000 jobs and $11.5 billion of economic impact to our state. You know, how can we change that? How can we grow that? We're here. David commented on this. We need a clear, consistent, predictable permitting process. We have had discussions with Commissioner Austin and Commissioner Fredrickson, and this morning we talked to Governor Dayton about the process, and I know he's talked about it in the State of the State address. We need to continue down that path to make it a process that works for not only the farmers but for everyone involved, the environment, the farmers, and business. Also, we have been working for a few years now on advocating a dairy teaching and consumer education facility in Minnesota, the brick and mortar at the University of Minnesota. While it's, you know, it's there and we respect it, it's time to have some new facilities for our research staff to work in, and we're asking that there be an authority established this year. I know that some of you representatives have talked about bringing that forward as a bill, and we would encourage that. If you look to our sister state to the west, South Dakota, they have a brand new cheese plant coming, and what is enticing that is the growth of their industry and also the fact that they have a wonderful dairy research facility right in the community where that cheese plant is going to be built. We need to do that here in Minnesota. We need to have the research in place so that, you know, it creates the environment that we want to be in dairy and we want to be leaders in that business. Other areas, we would like to maintain the high quality food standards in Minnesota by staying with the existing food standards we have. Also, healthy choices in schools. It may not be in front of this committee, but we need our young people to be able to have access to good food, good healthy food, and dairy is part of that. And also, David also talked about the livestock investment grant. Whether it be a grant or a credit, we need to do something so that we can enhance and entice our dairy industry to expand on that $11.5 billion of economic activity. Mr. Chair, that ends my little spiel here, and together we can move our dairy industry forward.
That's right. Thank you so much for your testimony. We are 7 minutes over. Do you have a comment, Representative Schmansky?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think we should have just given them the hour that they had.
I know it. I know it. Mr. Ward wouldn't let me. I'm teasing. So thank you so much for all that you do. I already met with some dairy producers in my office this morning. I'm sure everybody here has as well. Once again, keep the tradition alive. We greatly appreciate that as well. And with that, members, we are adjourned.